Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Youth basketball is often disorganized, focused solely on winning, and generally frustrating. But at Pro Skills Basketball, our mission is to change that culture. We strive to provide a more professional experience for parents, players, and coaches. One focused on organized communication, fun, mutual respect, and personal growth, on and off the court. And the Youth Hoops Pod is a part of that. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
What's up, everyone? My name is Brendan Winters, and I'm the co-founder and president of Pro Skills Basketball and Team Curry. And today, I'll be your co-host. I'm joined by PSB lead trainer Christian Barber in our interview with Drew Hanlon. Drew is one of the top NBA skills trainers in the world and the CEO of Pure Sweat Basketball, a training and coaching company. Drew has a long list of NBA clients, but some of the bigger names include Bradley Beal, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, and Zach LaVine. Pure Sweat is much more than just NBA training. They also offer an online training app, virtual coaching courses, pro scout school, among other things. In this episode, we talk with Drew about the past year of his life with COVID and the NBA shutdown, the positives and negatives of being an NBA player trainer, his training philosophy, his relationship with his clients, his work with Jason Tatum starting from a young age, and much more. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Drew Hanlon.
Well, Drew, welcome to the Youth Hoops Pod. Appreciate you being here. I've been trying to connect with you for a little while now through our mutual friend, Alan Stein. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate your patience. I know that my schedule is crazy. I was telling my sister is getting married next summer. And she was like, hey, I know you don't need it, but where do you want me to save the date? And I was like, that's the hardest question that I ever get asked is what address to send stuff to because I'm on the move so much. So I appreciate your patience and I'm glad we're able to do it today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So where are you now?
Well, I'm in Philadelphia right now, but even during the COVID era that we're in, you know, it makes traveling a lot harder just because every time that I land, I have to quarantine and then get tested before I get on the court with guys. But I've still been basically spending a couple of weeks at a time with each one of my clients. And then we're all meeting in LA November 8th to start up kind of the month-long off season, if you will. Where they're going to be able to compete against each other and really ramp up so that they can be ready whenever the NBA season does resume.
Oh man, that's awesome. Where do you call home? I mean, you're from St. Louis?
I'm from St. Louis. Right now I kind of call LA home, but I actually left all my stuff in LA on November 11th last year. And I won't get back until November 7th this year. So literally 4 days shy of a year of being away from my stuff. I've got four bags in my golf clubs that I just I bring two of the bags in my golf clubs everywhere I go and have just been rotating. But it's definitely a part of the job that isn't the most glamorous. You know, a lot of people see wheels up to this place and wheels up to that place and they're like, you know, I'm envious of all your travels. And to be honest with you, I'm envious of all my friends that get time, you know, on a couch or relaxing and being in one place where they can get a consistent schedule. So, you know, as with anything, there's always pros and cons of every job. And one of the cons of my job is that I am on the road 24/7 and don't get to call anywhere really home.
Yeah. So over the last year, where have you been? I mean, I guess it's probably a lot of places, but like what was the reason you were traveling so much? Were you just hopping around visiting different clients or?
Yeah, definitely. So when the pandemic, you know, started, I had already spent, you know, the first half of the year just traveling around to all my clients and, you know, getting them ramped up. And then obviously you had All-Star break, that was, you know, right then. And then right afterwards, I was doing a camp in Hawaii and I was actually on my way to Philadelphia to see Joel. And I remember I had a layover in Phoenix and I land in Phoenix and I had more missed FaceTimes and more missed text messages than I'd ever had when I landed. And, you know, 99% of the time when I'm flying, I, you know, get Wi-Fi so I can, you know, stay connected. But I was tired from, you know, the events. We had back-to-back 8-hour events in Hawaii. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to rest up on this flight. And sure enough, when I land, they're all like, "What are you? Where have you been? What are you doing? You're always accessible." And I started calling back some of my players, and they're like, "Hey, what now?" You know, the NBA season had just got, you know, postponed, and they were wondering, how long do we have? So, you know, is it a 2-week thing where we stay in shape? Is it a month long thing where we take a week off and then we start ramping up? Or is this going to be a mini off season? And so, you know, I didn't have the answers. And for the first time ever, we couldn't strategically go about a period of time. Normally, we know the off season is going to be, you know, 4 months or 2 months or whatever the period of time is, depending on when they get knocked out in the postseason. And then we can say, okay, based on load management, we're going to give you, you know, 3 weeks off because of the amount of minutes you played in the season, then 2 weeks to get your body right, you know, get your cardio, get your weightlifting in and start prepping the body for on-court work. And then we're going to get, you know, 6 weeks of on-court work. Then we're going to take a week off, et cetera, et cetera. We didn't have an answer because we didn't know anything that was going on. We didn't have a timetable. So most of my guys, I recommended based on what I was hearing that, you know, they take, you know, 3 weeks off because we knew it was going to be a little bit longer than the, you know, than the public did. We were getting a little bit more information from the NBA. So a lot of them took 3 weeks off, then started to slowly ramp up. Then it got pushed back a little bit longer. So then they started slowly ramping down a little bit. And then once we got note that, you know, that the bubble was going to happen, all those players started ramping up and started to get their cardio right and then started to get their game right so that they were prepared once they got to the bubble.
I gotcha. And who are the players you're mostly working with these days?
So I've got a bunch of guys that I work with, the guys that, you know, have been with me since, you know, their college days or guys that I've been with for the last couple of years. You've got Jason Tatum and Brad Beal, who I've been with since they were both 13 years old. They're both St. Louis guys like myself. I work with Joel Embiid, Zach LaVine, Kelly Oubre, RJ Barrett, Myers Leonard. I mean, the list goes on, but I work with a lot of guys. You know, it's fun for me too, because those are some of the guys that, you know, are more of the, you know, maybe high profile, but you know, I also get to work with guys like Shemi Olajay, who's one of my favorite guys to work with.
Shemi's great, man. We ran his summer camp, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and the guy stayed afterwards and helped put away chairs.
Yeah, just, I mean, that's the thing is, like, you know, it's funny because I almost feel bad when people start name-dropping my clients and they only want to name the guys that are, you know, all-stars or all-NBA-type players. But the truth is, you know, I value the relationships with every one of my clients the exact same. And so – you know, Shimmy, I've had since his pre-draft. I love working with him, you know, and even seeing him, he jumped up, his 3-point percentage jumped up to 37% this year, which it was at 31 the year before. Seeing like a 6% growth for him is a huge win. And while he might not get the notoriety that, you know, Jason Tatum does when Jason, you know, jumps up and becomes a second, you know, second team All-NBA guy, development is development. And, you know, for me, seeing anybody get results is just a huge win. And so, yeah, but I work with a lot of guys and I'm not one of those guys that like has a guy here for a week and has a guy there for a week. My guys are full time. So they come to me during the off season, during the season, I'm providing video breakdowns and post game analysis and doing analytics for them or making adjustments throughout the season. I'm traveling to them so that we can get work and make tweaks and adjustments so that they can be at their best when they need to be at their best, which is a little bit different than most, you know, training player relationships where the player just works out with, you know, whoever's convenient in the area that they want to spend time in.
Drew, as we're starting to get into kind of who you work with and obviously you're listing, I mean, some of the best players in the world right now. Let's take Jason Tatum, for example. I look at Jason Tatum as just an elite offensive talent. You know, like, I mean, he appears to have just about every weapon he could need at his disposal. How do you approach player development with a player that is already so talented? Obviously, we all know you always have things to work on. You can always get better. But where does your approach look like with a guy like that?
So I'm going to take you back to the start. Jason's 13 years old when I first started working with him. Brad Beal was like a big brother to him, said, "Hey, you got to work out with my little brother." And, you know, we started working out. And the first week that we worked out, all we did was we worked on the jab step. I broke down film. I showed him Michael. I showed him Kobe. I showed him T-Mac. I showed him all these guys. And we studied the jab and we worked on different jabs. We didn't shoot a shot the first week. Now think about that as a 13-year-old to have the discipline to show up every day and just work on the jab step. And then finally, I was like, you know, maybe 5 days in, I said, all right, now we're ready to move on. He said, man, thankfully, like, you know what I mean? I'm waiting for all the moves that I'm seeing you do with Brad right after me. I was like, now we're ready for the jab, one dribble pull-up. He's like, come on, man. Like, this has got to be a joke. And I was like, listen, we have time. We can develop year after year, give you one thing at a time so that eventually your game is just kind of indestructible. You know what I mean? Where you just can't be picked apart. And so.
Yeah, lay that foundation.
Yeah, and the next evolution for Jason is really driving through contact, you know, which is something that, you know, as his body continues to mature and develop, you know, he'll get better at, but just driving through contact, and then playmaking, which you saw in the postseason, he averaged, you know, 6 assists a game, which was a huge step forward in that category, and then extending his range. He shot over 40%, you know, he led the league in sidestep threes, but now if we make him more of a weapon from, you know, 4 feet beyond the three-point line, now they have to guard you differently. Now when you're attacking downhill, more room for making plays, more room for finishing. It just helps everything. So he's got a bunch of different areas that he can grow in and develop in. The big ones that we're working on this summer are those three, you know, with basically the first one is just understanding that if we can make shots consistently from 28 feet, then it's going to make your drives easier, which is going to make your playmaking easier. And then it's also going to improve your finishing. But then also, if there is that contact, being able to stay on balance and play through contact instead of always trying to draw the foul or always, you know, kind of, you know, shooting a floater when you could get to the basket if you take one more power dribble into the guy's shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could follow up real quick, Brendan, I just quick follow up on that. How much agency does a guy, again, we'll use Jason Tatum, for example, how much is he involved in the self-analysis of his game? For example, as a trainer myself, I have so many parents and kids who come to me and say, what do I need to work on? And I try to sometimes flip the script and say, well, what do you think you need to work on? Like you play your own game. Is Jason or some of these guys you work with, are they just as much kind of like, hey, you know, Drew, I felt like I didn't do this well, or I feel like I need to work on this area, or is it all you guiding them?
It's both. I mean, to be honest with you, the process that I use is I always use the analogy of a GPS. You know, it starts with the player telling me I want to get to here, or me helping them say, hey, this is probably where you need to get to. So we basically together set kind of a destination. And then my job is to be able to efficiently and effectively get them there as quick as possible. And if they get off route, my job is to reroute them back on the path. Now, saying that, I think it's important that you rally the troops. And what rallying the troops means is not only is the player and the trainer on the same page, but also like last week I was with Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge, and we're all talking about, what does Jason need to do? What's the next role that he's going to be in? What changes, you know, are they going to make systematically so that I can have Jason be the best version of himself for the Boston Celtics? As skills coaches, we have many different hats that we wear. Sometimes we're babysitting them. Sometimes we're therapists. Sometimes we're just a skills coach. But regardless which hat we're wearing, our number one job is to make sure that that player is happy off the court and successful on the court. And the only way they can be successful on the court is if they're providing value for their team. And I always say the number one skill that a player can have is their ability to impact their team's chance at winning the game. And so I always make sure that I'm getting feedback from anybody that's in that player's ear, because what you don't want is confusion. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I've really picked up golf during the pandemic. And, you know, at first I would watch my swing and I would compare it to Tiger Woods' swing. And I was like, all right, if I can just do what Tiger does, I'm going to be a great golfer. So then I was like looking, I was like, all right, I'm coming really steep on my swing. So I was like, I need to shallow out the club. So I go on YouTube and the first video is like, all right, once you get it to your backswing, all you have to do is let your hands fall down the wall. And then boom, you're going to be able to have a good impact position. So I was like, great, now I know what to do. And I was like, let me watch another video. I watched the other video and they're like, absolutely do not pull your hands down. Open your hips. And if you open your hips, and I was like, well, shoot, now which one do I listen to? And then the third video said, hey, once you get here, bump your hips first, then go through. And I'm like, all right, now I've got three different elite golf swing coaches telling me three different things. Now I'm confused. You don't want the player confused out there thinking about all these different things they should work on or all these things they should do. Ideally, what you do is have one strategic kind of focus and plan, lock in on that, get really good at that, And then as we talked about earlier, you just layer kind of, you know, your game so that when you get out there, you already know exactly what you're able to do. You're confident in doing those things, and then you can get those results.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I have a couple questions, and I definitely have a comment as well. So you have you typically have a pretty good relationship with your players, coaches, GMs, and their staff.
Yeah, I'm like really, really close with all of them. I think it's so important, especially at the NBA level. The NBA players have a little bit more freedom than they do at the younger levels. Like even in college, you know, I've got a good relationship with some of the college coaches, but college coaches have a little bit more authority over the players. You know, whereas the players in the NBA are the highest paid individuals, and they're more valued than the coaches most of the time. So most of the time, the NBA is more of a player-led, player-driven league, whereas in college, the coaches are kind of the figures, and whatever they say goes. But I mean, ideally, it doesn't matter if I'm working with a high school, you know, a high school coach, an AAU coach, a college coach, NBA coach. First thing I do when a player reaches out to me is I try to reach out to the coach and kind of cross that bridge so that at least at the bare minimum, even if the coach says, you know what, I don't want him working with another trainer, at least he knows I did everything I could to try to include him in the plan. And then when we kind of have that initial conversation, I also want feedback. I want to say, hey, what are some of the things that you need this player to do? And so I can try to help work for you. Let me help you kind of relay the same messages that you're trying to ingrain in that player. And so then again, we're all kind of working together. I just call it rallying the troops. We can get everybody, you know, to push and pull the player in the same direction. Then there is no kind of adversity that the player has to face that is unnecessary. The player might hit a wall, but then we're all pushing them under the wall or over the wall or through the wall or around the wall together instead of pulling them in different directions where then they end up, you know, staying put where they are.
Yeah, that could, because I know that's a big point of tension, especially these days, is the trainer of the player and then what the coaching staff wants or what the team wants. And something if it's not communicated the right way or if there's no communication, it's like what you said. The player might be being told one thing by the trainer and another thing by the coaching staff. And it's just at some point it all comes to a head. But
you know why? I think the biggest reason why is ego. I think ego gets in the way, whether it's the ego of the trainer or the ego of the coach, somebody has an ego and they forget that it should be all about the player. And when everyone's goal is to make that player the best possible player they can be for that team, then there should be no egos. It should just be, hey, it's not who's right, it's what's right. And I think that's the most important thing. It's let's do what's right for the player, push them and encourage them to go in the direction they need to go to, and then they're able to get the best results possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I want to get back to what you said previously, and Christian's question actually is the question I was going to follow up with a little bit. So my comment was going to be what you said about just doing who was it? Was it Brad Beal that, or no, it's Jason Tatum that you were just doing jab steps for a week, right? So ever since the pandemic, we've gone hard into the virtual space and we do a ton of virtual workouts. And initially we were like, we don't know if they're going to work really. We think they will. It's better than nothing. Let's get it on and just do it and see what happens. And Christian really led the charge there, started doing Instagram workouts, and then we transitioned over to Zoom like a lot of, and then we started perfecting that. But like our kids came back out onto the court after 3 months, and the ones who were consistently doing the virtual stuff were more skilled, just way better than before. And we were like, what happened? Like, what was it? And we kind of thought about it, but it goes back to what you just said. It was like virtual confined them to this like small space. You couldn't do all sorts of crazy stuff, launch threes, launch, you know, 35 footers, do, you know, whatever, reverse layups. It was like you had to work on like footwork, ball handling, maybe form shooting, and the strength of the lifts. And it was like the core foundational skills of a player. And we like blew our mind a little bit, but it was like, it was funny you said that, because it's like that's exactly what we're seeing with the virtual stuff. Is like you constrict them to a foundational skill. And if you do it for long enough, like they get way better than if it's just like unleashed.
I guess. And I think that's something that, you know, Brad Beal was on JJ Redick's podcast the other day, and JJ is asking about some of the work that we had done together over the years. And And that's what Brad said. Brad's like, we've been working together for 13 years, but every year we pick one focus. And as crazy as that sounds, you know, there are some times where players maybe need one or two focuses or maybe three focuses. But the problem is, if you try to go width instead of depth, a lot of times you don't spend enough time on something to master it, and then you're not confident to use it in games. So I'll give you an example. If you go out there and you're working on finishing and you do, you know, 8 Euro steps, then 8 cross steps, then 8 reverse rolls and 8, you know, and you have all these different finishes, while your bag may be expanding, the problem is you're not spending enough time on something like, hey, you know what? Let's just spend, instead of doing 50 different finishes, let's just spend 50 times working on our touch so that we just avoid the defender. Now we have the touch to finish it. Or shooting. You know, if you work on catch and shoots, you work on right dribble pull-ups, left dribble pull-ups, maybe some kind of sidestep and sidestep. Now in the game, it's just you're reacting instead of having to, okay, I'm going to this move or going to that move. And so I've simplified my approach to player development every year that I've done it. And if you look back like on YouTube and watch Brad Beal's pre-draft videos, I mean, you'll see a lot of stuff that Michael Jordan did or Dwayne Wade did or Kobe Bryant did. And we were trying to mimic some of those guys. And while it did make Brad super versatile, as we've got smarter, we've really locked in so that we master the fundamentals that allow him to be successful at everything. So we know if he can decelerate and accelerate on both feet, well, now it just opens up his toolbox. We know if he can finish with both hands with good touch, it opens up his finishing. We know that if he can pass and distribute with both hands, now he becomes a better playmaker. So instead of having to work on a million drive and kick, drive and hook, drive and, if he just knows how to pass and control the ball, then he has a bigger toolbox. So, you know, the big thing is I see a lot of players that when they come to me for pre-draft training, they get to me as college athletes. They've been really, really highly touted ever since they were young, but they lack the basic fundamentals to build on. So maybe they have bad form on their shooting and they're like, Drew, I really need to work on creating more space. And I'm like, listen, until we can knock down shots consistently, we should never work on creating space, you know? And then they say, I want to work on my step back, but they don't even know how to decelerate and stop on balance. If you can't stop on balance, how are you going to stop and then hop back or separate, step back, and then get on balance to shoot the shot? So I think that people don't realize that, you know, when people talk about fundamentals, most people kind of roll their eyes because they think fundamentals are basic and boring. But the truth is fundamentals are what allow you to build everything else. And I think that's something that's so important for everybody that's listening, because you see too many trainers that they learn something new or see something new and they immediately want to show off their new knowledge. You see, you know, coaches that don't want to lose their players' attention. So they do cool things and new things because they want to basically trick them into being excited. And you see players that would rather look good on the gram than look good in the games. And all those things go into, don't get bored with the basics. Let's master the fundamentals. And you know what the most fun and entertaining and exciting thing is? Shine when the game's actually happening. And so I think that as long as people keep game results as the priority, then they're going to end up working on the game skills and fundamentals that allow them to get those game results.
Yeah, I love that, Drew. As I'm listening to you talk, again, as a fellow skills trainer myself on a different level, you clearly see the game through this lens of analysis. You're talking about, well, you can't shoot a step back because you don't know how to decelerate. So you're constantly breaking these things down in your head. How did you get to that point? Did you always see the game that way? You were a high-level Division I basketball player. And for myself, as a player, I never saw the game the way I see it now that I'm outside the line, so to speak. Now that I've had to kind of take that step back, I feel like so much more has illuminated in my brain after, you know, in a way, having the game taken away in terms of being able to play it. What was the journey like for you to get to this point where you now see the game through the lens that you see it through?
To be honest with you, it was two things. One, being a film geek, and two, asking a ton of questions. And so the first one, being a film geek, when I was in college, I started a project that I watched every single made field goal in the NBA for 8 NBA seasons. Now, since then, it's been, you know, I've watched the 9th season, and now I watch as many games as possible. Now it's not as much of a, like, every single game, every possession as it was back then. Now I have a team that helps me break down those things. But I would watch the games, and my roommate, Corey Schmidt, who, you know, now coaches at the college level, I paid him to just record, like to write down and type all of my thoughts. So I'd be watching and I'd break down all the ball screens and I'd have all the ball screen clips organized. And I'd say, okay, you know, the first thing you should always look at when, you know, the team is blitzing is reject. If you can reject, reject. If not, use a screen. Now, when you get to the level of the screen, second thing you're looking at is, can you split through? If you can split through, split through. If not, try to get around. If you can get around, get around. If not, drag and force a switch on the screen. And so what happened is, by watching all these clips, I organized them and grouped them together into specific categories. I was able to watch the tendencies of what works always, what works most of the time, what sometimes works, and what never works. And then I was able to make the complex really simple. You know, some people, you know, call it dumbify, you know what I mean? Simplify it for dummies. Some people say simplexity, make the complex simple. But regardless what you call it, I almost had to, I started here. I learned all this stuff just so that I could dummy it down and simplify it where I could really make it progressive for players. And I'll tell you this, I did this the other day and I said, I asked one of the trainers that I was mentoring in my mentorship program. And I said, tell me everything you know about shooting in 1 minute, go. And he was like, all right, so you want your hand in the middle of the ball and you want an elbow above your eyebrow and you want your other hand on the side and you want to snap it with this finger. And he started naming off all these good teaching points. And I said, stop. Now, if I ask somebody to repeat what you just said, would they be able to have a clue of what you just said? No, because it was all scattered. And while you might know a ton, if you can't relay the information in a simple way, the players can't retain it. So I said, now let me take you through a really complex version. And then let me take you through an easy version. I was like, complex version that they can actually visualize. Let's start at their feet. And I would say, the first thing you need to do is you need to have a good balanced base, which means your feet wide, shoulder width apart, anything that feels comfortable. Angle doesn't really matter. It's all about comfortability. If you're at 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock for a right-hand shooter, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, doesn't matter as long as you feel comfortable and you feel like you're on balance. Then we go up to the knees. Knees, just have them flexed. You want to be able to be relaxed and in a comfortable stance. Hips, make sure your hips are even and parallel. Make sure your hips are low so that you can use that kind of spring upward. Ball positioning, when you catch the ball or when you pick up the ball, you want to make sure you get a good clean pickup around your belly button area usually. Then after that, you want to start your shooting motion. As your hips are going down, your elbow's starting to go up. You want to make sure that you kind of, you know, start the motion up. And then what you're going to do is you're going to connect your lower body with your upper body. And then when you get to the, you know, the shot pocket, which is right above, you know, kind of your eyebrow level, you want to start making sure that your hand is wrist back and you want to start getting your hand under the middle of the ball. Because at the point of release, we want to have our hand in the middle of the ball. We want our hand to be spread wide. We want to snap it with our elbow above our eyebrow and we want our pointer finger at the rim. When we land, we want to be on land on balance and also make sure when you shoot the ball, you're fully extended. You're shooting it right before the peak of your jump instead of shooting on the way down. Now, at least with that complex version, I gave you a systematic where now you can almost visually see the person jumping up and shooting.
Yep.
Now I make it a lot easier though. I say, do you think that a player can remember all that? They can visually see that because at least it's sequential and it's in an order. But now what if I say, hey, listen, the biggest thing I want you to work on is feet, flow, and follow through. Feet, I want them to be shoulder width apart, on balance at the start, and I want you to land on balance. Flow, I want to make sure that you get your hips down and you connect it with the upper body so that you're shooting in one smooth motion. Follow through, I want to make sure that your hand's in the middle of the ball, then you shoot with your elbow above your eyebrow, point your finger at the rim. Feet, flow, follow through, that can be remembered by all players. And so I took something that was really complex, I systematically programmed it from the feet up, and then I made it a lot easier by just saying feet, flow, follow through. Again, feet up, but now it's in an easy kind of three Fs where they can remember the three Fs, they can remember the trigger words, and now they actually have a sequence that works for them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of people say that you can tell if someone actually totally understands a complex topic if they can explain it at, you know, a fourth grade level or you know, sixth grade level or whatever. It's the people that explain it in a complex way that's like they've just memorized like some of the terminology or whatever it is, but they don't have a true understanding of it because they can't break it down into like a simpler form. That's interesting. Hey,
I spent time with Kobe Bryant on the court. You know, Jason Tatum and I went out there and spent some time with him working out. And that was the biggest thing. When I asked him, I said, yo, how did you go about patterning your game after MJ? How did you steal MJ's game? And he said, it started with the fadeaway. Once I mastered the fadeaway, then I mastered the shot fake into a fadeaway. Then I mastered the shot fake into a step through. Now people were sitting on my baseline fadeaway. Then I added the half spin fadeaway. Then it was a half spin fadeaway, shot fake, then fadeaway. Then it was a half spin fadeaway, shot fake, step through. I built my game in a systematic way so that I knew my first read was always baseline fadeaway. If they overplayed to stop it, then I would go to my counters. But it was built in a 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, it went that way instead of what most players do. They have random moves. They'll be like, all right, I'm going to do the crossover jab, and then I'm going to go between the leg delay, and then I'm going to – that's not how it works. And if you think about the best scorers in the NBA, they all have a system. If you think about James Harden, who's the leading scorer the last couple of years in the NBA, you know, if everyone said, if you threw a ball to anybody that watches any decent amount of NBA basketball and said, mimic James Harden, they would immediately go between the legs and start dancing and know it's going to be either between the leg float, between the leg cross and go, between the leg into a sidestep, or between the legs into like a fake attack and go, or a fake attack and change direction. You would know what it is. You know what I mean? Just like if you said mimic Steph Curry, you're going to start shuffling because you're thinking I'm trying to get my shot off and maybe get into my hezzies. Do you think about KD? You always think about right to left float, hezzy jump shot, right to left float, hezzy and go. All these players have these patterns. If you think about Jamal Crawford, you're going to naturally start hopping up and down and skipping and having the Seattle swag. It's just Isaiah Thomas is with his little half spin that he used, you know, the Smitty move. All these players have their go-to stuff. And the reason we say that they're signature moves is just because they've mastered a systematic way to, you know, read the game of basketball.
Yeah. Hey, let's one thing that I think is impressive about you is, I mean, aside from the training stuff we've just talked about, is how you've also been able to develop a business around it. I mean, you have a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you have, I guess, training, I would imagine, is your core business, your training of NBA players or college players, whatever. But, and I could be wrong here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but your kind of ancillary business or secondary business, you know, I don't know how you look at it. And that's maybe what we can clear up now is like, I mean, you've got an app and it looks awesome. I'm looking at your website right now. You've got virtual skills school, business of basketball training. So some online training courses, virtual scout school, you have a mentorship program. Looks like you do some events. Maybe you train some other kids and maybe it's not you, maybe you've built up a team. So can you just talk a little bit about your business and where it is now, what you're doing, and you know, do you have a team and where you're going with it all?
Yeah, so I mean, it really, when I started training back when I was, you know, 16 years old, there was one reason why I fell in love with training. I got to help people using the game of basketball. So basically, I love help people. I love basketball. I was able to combine those two things. Since then, I've kind of grown the mission to help as many players, coaches, trainers. And now we just, you know, I bought Pro Scout School so that we
have
everything under one roof. The biggest thing that I did a couple years ago is I hired Rich Ozowski, who is my COO, who does everything for me. I mean, he's a lifesaver, to be honest with you. And he runs the day-to-day Pure Sweat stuff. He's up at all hours working his butt off. So I found an amazing partner to really work with me. I don't ever look at him as an employee. I look at him as like a co-boss, you know, where we're both running things together. But yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of things and our ultimate goal is just help as many people as we can. So the app goal was be able to provide a Drew Hanlon workout experience virtually. Then we had the virtual skills school, which is basically for my entire life, I've been like, why is there no such thing as basketball school? Like you go learn about math and science and social studies. Why can't you go learn about triple threat, ball screens and post moves? So I said, you know what? I'm going to share my entire curriculum. I had this curriculum that was, you know, 2,800 pages. And then I had a bunch of other loose pages that were, you know, floating around. I said, I want to turn this into a full-blown basketball school where I can help trainers and coaches that are working with these athletes understand how to teach in a systematic, progressive way. Basically, I want to help save them all the film edits and the studying and all the questions that I had to kind of ask when I was growing up. Then the next question became, there's so many people that want to make training a full-time thing. So I said, all right, let's start a business, you know, kind of mentorship program where business and basketball training, where I share, you know, the little things like how to start, you know, actual corporation. So legally you're protected, how to get insurance, how to actually start growing academies, how to kind of, you know, make sure that you're profiting enough to take care of yourself while always, you know, looking out for the players first and foremost, and then how to expand your social media, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, then it became something where we were like, all right, there's a lot of young coaches that want to get into college coaching or MBA coaching. Well, I don't know how many times I've had that same phone call. Hey, here's step one, here's step two. So I said, why don't I put together a course for coaches, learn how to break down film, learn how to, you know, scout or recruit or whatever it is, put together a pregame scout report or make postgame adjustments, how to run a practice plan. And then we finally, Rich brought, you know, a couple of years ago, I had spoke at Pro Scout School in Vegas. We loved the stuff that was going on there. And so Rich was like, Drew, we have an opportunity to, you know, purchase Pro Scout School. What do you think about it? And, you know, I trusted Rich. I said, hey, listen, let's do it. Obviously, you know, it was a bad time for us because we didn't get to run one this year, but we really just wanted to be able to service everybody in the basketball industry. We wanted to be able to take care of players, take care of coaches, take care of trainers, take care of scouts, take care of young coaches that are, you know, aspiring to move up the ranks as far as GAs, video coordinators, et cetera. And then on top of all that, you know, I've got my MBA training and I still do a world tour every year, minus this year with the pandemic. But yeah, it's a lot on my plate, but really my goal is to help as many people as I can through the game of basketball. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
Awesome. Hey, really quick, I want to jump in just as a fun question for any of our young listeners out there. I mean, come on, man, you get to work with some of the best athletes in the world. Is that still, does it ever just hit you? Oh man, this is awesome what I get to do every day. Get to walk in the gym with a Joel Embiid, with a Jason Tatum. Do you still find that fun and excitement in it that, you know, you may have been much more excited about 10 years ago? How do you still find that joy to keep going? Because like you said here to start the podcast, you're moving all the time. You haven't been home in almost a year. You know, do you still get those awesome moments of, man, I'm working with these awesome players?
Not too much. To be honest with you, like my job is to literally nitpick these players. So, you know what I mean? Like a lot, like I remember Brad Beal scored 50 back-to-back nights and I sent him like I don't know how long the edit was, but like a 12-minute edit of all the things he could have done better. And he's like, damn, bro, we can't celebrate. I just dropped 100 points. You know what I mean? So, yeah, and I look at it differently. Like, you know, I don't know how many times where people come up to my guys and I always laugh. I say, you know, the three main hats I wear, I'm their skills coach. I'm their therapist because I'm always the one that they trust just to tell things because they know I'm not going to share it with anybody else and I'll be able to help them get through. And I'm the photographer. And what that means is when we're out to eat, fans come up and they'll be like, oh my God, Zach LaVine. And they kind of look at me. I'm like, yeah, I'll take a picture of y'all here. Give me the phone, you know? But the truth is they're my friends. Like those are my best friends. So I don't look at it as cool. The other day I got to spend a whole day with Michael Jordan, which that was a surreal moment for me just because I grew up idolizing Michael Jordan. Like when I used to, if I did anything when I was younger to get in trouble, and I was normally, I looked at myself as a pretty good kid, but if I got in any kind of trouble, I was grounded from watching the Bulls play that night. And then I would sneak my dad's Walkman radio. That takes you back to the 90s. Take my dad's Walkman radio into my bedroom, act like I was sleeping and be listening to the game like this on the Walkman. I mean, that's how obsessed I was with MJ and the Bulls growing up. And spending a day with him was really cool just because I got to ask him all the questions I've always wanted to ask. And also, I always ask this question to my guys. So whenever my guys are struggling mentally, emotionally with something, I always say, hey, would your 10-year-old self be proud of who you are today? And if they're being real with themselves, they always smile and they're like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like if I
That's a great question.
Kelly Oubre, and he's like, yeah, my 10-year-old self would be wearing a Kelly Oubre jersey and be the biggest fan. You know what I mean? If I go ask that question to Brad Beal, he's like, are you kidding me? Like the fact that, you know, I get to play basketball for a living, I get to be one of the best. I'm the second leading scorer in the NBA at 30.5 points a game. Like, yes, I'd be so proud of myself. And so for me, that's every once in a while I have those moments where I'll be like, my 10-year-old self, literally my birthday present was a ticket to the Bulls game. My Christmas present was a flight to the Bulls game. And I look forward to it, you know, for those 3 months, just to be able to spend a day with my idol was really cool. And then also I always say this, but there was one moment that really was surreal for me. I was doing a world tour last year. And so I think I did 15 countries in 31 days, which is ridiculous thinking back how much, you know, I was moving around all over the world. But there was a really cool moment where I was on a layover in Spain, and I was coming back from Tel Aviv, and I was getting ready to cross where, like, there's a security for just flights going to the United States. There's extra security that the U.S. does. And so I went through the regular security, and I'm walking to the U.S. security, and a kid comes sprinting up, about a high school kid, sprinting. Hey, Coach Drew, out of breath. And I'm like, yeah, what's up, my man? He's like, man, I just want to say thank you so much. I know you don't know who I am, but I use all your programs. And he started telling me about all the success he's had. He's like, bro, I started working with your programs back when you were nobody. And for me, it was such a surreal moment that I was able to impact somebody's game in life that I had never met. And so every once in a while, those kind of moments, the appreciation moments where somebody else is like, hey, just so you know, like, I wasn't going to make the high school team. I got cut last year. I used one of your, you know, programs on your app. And, you know, now I was a part of a state championship team. Or, hey, I thought I was going to give up basketball after my senior year in high school, but, you know, I really was encouraged by your morning shooting program that you did as a player. I started doing it. I got a college scholarship. That's going to save me $120,000. Like, those kind of moments are the moments that really I kind of say, all right, like, you know what I mean? I'm helping a lot of people, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I love that. Really quick, Brendan, and I'll throw it to you. I know we're at the end of the time, but I just wanted to add a comment. I love that you said they're your friends. I've been fortunate to work with Luke May at Chapel Hill when he won a national championship. Wendell Moore Jr., who's at Duke, just to throw out some big names. And when you're in the gym with them, man, they're just another person. It's just another guy sweating. And if anyone's still listening at this point, any young listeners, I just love that you put it that way. And I want, you know, everyone to know that could be you too. At one point, they were just a 10-year-old kid. And once you do get in the gym with them, I've been fortunate to play some pickup with Kimba as well. And it just blew me away that Kimba was just a nice guy that smiled and walked in and shook my hand and said, how you doing today? And I want everyone out there listening to remember that could be you. That could have been one of us. It's just another guy who certainly probably has some physical gifts, but they just have worked really hard, and they're not necessarily superheroes. That is attainable if you're willing to work for it.
Let me cut in and add to that too. Somebody the other day asked me on Instagram, I was doing a Q&A, and they said, what's the best way to build your clientele as a trainer? And my answer was, get one player better, then get another player better, and then get another player better. And that's the real secret sauce. Help every player that you're in the gym. If you're a player and you're sitting there and saying, you know, oh man, what can I do to make this big jump? Don't worry about the big jump. What can you do tomorrow that's going to impact your ability to get better for the next day and for the next day and the next day? And that compounding, you know, effect is going to take you to a whole new level. And I think so many trainers right now are so quick to take credit for everybody that walks in their gym. They want to take a picture so they can validate themselves. But to me, the best sign of a good trainer or a good coach is someone that takes a player from point A and gets them to point B and then C and then D. It's not just grabbing somebody that's already at, you know, F and then claiming, look, I'm working with this guy. And so for trainers out there that maybe are just starting out and they're maybe down on themselves because they don't get the social media recognition or the validation from all that stuff, just know, I still to this day, I value training every sixth grader that I work with just as much as I do when I'm working with my all NBA guys. And the truth is, where you take a player from where they start to where they finish, that's what you're responsible for. And I tell people all the time, most basketball players, the game of basketball is the second most important thing in their life. Family's number one. And then basketball is number two, because they connect their identity so close with their basketball. And so while I try to, the first step is I try to detach that and let them realize basketball is just a game and a part of life. For that moment, while they're still playing, they feel like basketball is the biggest thing in their life outside of their family. And if somebody, doesn't matter how old, how good, how talented, how highly ranked they are, if they trust you with the second most important thing in your life, you have a responsibility to do anything and everything you can to help them maximize, you know, their happiness and their success in that area of their life. And so I really do. It drives me crazy when I see, you know, people basically like stomping on their own clientele to be like, oh man, I only work with sixth graders. I'm like, you need to value those sixth graders, because you know what? Those sixth graders are relying on you and trusting on you, and they appreciate all the work you put in. So like, don't look down on yourself. The person that I value the most in the basketball world is my high school basketball coach. And you know what? Like, yeah, he won 3 state championships, but when I met him, he had never won anything. We won our first, you know, my first state championship was his first state championship. We did that together, but I appreciate all the hard work he did and all this. And I value him just as much as all the big name coaches that I've been able to steal from. So, you know, for people out there that maybe don't have a blue check or don't have 100,000 followers or don't whatever, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, whenever your career, your training career ends, or your coaching career ends or whatever, the only thing that you're going to do is you're going to value the relationships you made and the impact that you had on everybody that you spent time with in the gym.
Man, I was getting ready to ask a final question, but I think that is perfect. That is a great way to end it. Cause I was literally going to ask, like, you know, what's your top advice for basically players, parents, trainers, coaches, and like that covered it all. And it's right in line with what we believe. I mean, we're over here working with third through 11th graders. So we love it, man. And we appreciate you being on. You're doing excellent work. Not only at the NBA level, but also for the whole youth community. Love what you're doing online and virtually. Everyone who's listening to this, go check out the app, Pure Sweat. Check out his website, tons of stuff virtually, whether you're interested in being a scout, being a better coach. There's so much there. So make sure you go check it out. Drew, where can everyone find you online on social media, or how can they connect with you?
Yeah, it's easy. I mean, my handle is Drew Hanlon, H-A-N-L-E-N on all platforms. And then I've got a text community, 314-461-1862, which is basically a free, I mean, literally it's me texting. I send out text messages. People that first, when they sign up, it's funny. They'll always be like, is this really Drew or is this a robot? And then I'll go a couple of days, I'll forget to send out text messages and they'll be like, hey, why am I not getting messages? I'm like, because it's really me. Like, I'm really having to send these messages. I wish it was a robot that was doing it. But, if they want to get free stuff and be able to connect with me, you know, that I have a line. That number is strictly to help players, coaches, and trainers out. So 314-461-1862 is the best way to get a hold of me and get free access to all the drills that I send out on a weekly basis.
That's great. We'll put that in the show notes as well. So, hey, really appreciate it. Like we said, know you are a busy, busy man. So thanks for all you do. And man, hopefully one day we can do another round, because I feel like we could talk for another couple hours, but this has been great. So thanks a lot, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook, and at ProSkills B-Ball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.